Well, we're back from break here, and I got Andrew Johnson out of the UK, and absolutely amazing information. He's been laying the groundwork on the thermite and the energy, how that relates into this here, this cold fusion. And why don't you go ahead, Andrew, and continue on here.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, one thing that was very interesting is that you find out a lot of connections between the people that are involved in this picture. I mean, if we mentioned John Hutchison here already, now I knew from previous things that I'd read that John Hutchison had been visited by a team from Los Alamos National Laboratories, which we've already mentioned once, and he was visited by them in 1983. And there's a character called Colonel John Alexander who went to stay with John and work with John Hutchison for 4 months. And John Alexander makes no secret of this. And from what you know, has been described, it looks as if John Alexander knew what John Hutchison was doing, in terms of he knew the sort of effects and how they were created. He seemed to understand what was going on before he even went there. And John Alexander doesn't say that John Hutchison is a fraud. He doesn't say that at all. So this is somebody from Los Alamos National Laboratories. And then you find out that John Alexander is also connected with SRI, Stanford Research Institute, which has been involved with things like the remote viewing program, Operation Stargate. And you learn about all these sorts of connections. And then a figure which I'll perhaps mention later is also connected to SRI is Alfred Weber, who claims to be an international lawyer. But if we go back to where I was in terms of John Hutchison, now, if people say that John is a fraud, then why did he submit an affidavit to the court of the Southern District of New York for Dr. Judy Wood's legal case? He actually decided to submit this affidavit, and I helped him write it out, because Johns are not big on the old writing front. You know, he does write, but he tends to write in sort of capital letters and things like this. So we basically needed to get all the information down, and I wrote out this affidavit, and you can see this on Dr. Wood's website. Because to go back to where I was in terms of the NIST reports, Dr. Wood had found some basic flaws, like the towers didn't collapse, so even the title of the report was wrong, and she wanted to correct NIST on this. And there is a law called the Data Quality Act, DQA, and you can actually write to a government body and say the data in your reports that taxpayers have paid for is faulty and you need to correct it. And she wrote to them and told them this, and she produced this sort of 50-60 page long document correcting some of the errors. I hear we've got another break.
Yeah, we got a short one here, but because of music. We'll be right back in just a minute. Stay tuned. We'll be back here. This is astounding information. Well, we're back from break here and talking about 911 and free energy and cold fusion, and got Andrew out of the UK. And before you continue, do you have any contact information or any other information where people could get so they can learn more about what's going on?
Absolutely, yes. I have my own website. It's called checktheevidence.com. That's all one word. And if you go on to there, if people want to contact me, that's absolutely great. There's a contact button. They can click on that and, you know, type a message in there, and that will get sent through to me. There is also on that website, if you go onto the home page, there's a banner, and you can click on that, and that will take you to a free ebook, which covers, you know, a lot of the background to what I've been saying tonight, and other information as well. And I've put in there my sort of general conclusions and the things that I've tried to do to sort of get this information out there to the right people. Because, you know, what we're talking about here is not theory. It's well-established fact. And, you know, there are only really certain logical deductions that I think can be made from this. And I think those conclusions are vindicated by the actions which other people have taken to try and shut this discussion down. And so, you know, checktheevidence.com. If you go onto there, you've also got Dr. Judy Wood's website as well, of course, which is drjudywood.com. A lot of stuff you can download from there. You know, we've got MP3 files. I've got an audio section. If you click onto that and then click on the 911 section, You find all kinds of audios in there, you know, Steve Jones, Jim Fetzer, all these guys. You can download all that stuff. I've got articles on my website as well, which go through the background to the scholars group that I mentioned. All that, it's all, you know, I've tried to document it all so that people who are interested can, you know, read as much as they feel like reading to basically prove that what I'm telling you is true. I'd just like to sort of mention this legal action that Dr. Wood took, because I think this really forced it sorted out the truthers from the non-truthers, really, I think, in a very basic way, which is this, that Dr. Wood had submitted what's called this request for correction. In other words, she'd you know, written to Nest and say, your report is incorrect because you described the towers as collapsing. And they did not collapse. They were destroyed using some type of directed energy weapon. And she compiled all this evidence into a 50-page document, pictures, descriptions, some calculations in terms of the freefall speed. Again, this is all on Dr. Wood's website. Sent them to NIST, and they wrote back and said, no, we're not going to correct our report because, as far as we're concerned, it is accurate. But we did not investigate the collapse. We only investigated the events up to the point of collapse. So even though their report is entitled The Collapse of the World Trade Center, Dr. Wood has a letter from NIST saying they did not investigate the collapse at all. So that is, to me, is fraud on its face. That is a fraudulent report. Now,
absolutely. Beyond fraud.
Yeah, beyond fraud. And, it, you know, that's $13 million worth of I think it was either $13 or $16 million it cost to produce those reports. And again, if you go and look at who helped NIST produce those reports, because they used, they subcontracted the work, and they contracted the work to about 17 or 18 different companies, large and small. Three of those companies were Boeing, SAIC, and ARA. Boeing is obviously the aircraft manufacturer who do work for the military too. And SAIC is Science Applications International Corporation, a very strange company, and Applied Research Associates. And if you look at their websites, you can go look at their websites. You don't need to take my word for it. They all, without exception, all three of those do research into directed energy weapons, or they even manufacture directed energy weapon systems. Boeing is a co-contractor in the Airborne Laser Project, which was described as America's first directed energy weapon. And Applied Research Associates have this contract with the government to do directed energy weapons research and know all about directed energy weapons. So, again, we have the energy connection laid bare for all to see. Anybody who wants to go and look at the evidence can see it laid out on their websites and everything. You don't have to take my word for it.
So all we got to do is open our minds and look at the facts and engage a little logic and hopefully have an IQ on the plus side of 100.
Exactly. You know, it takes a long time to piece it together. You know, I mean, this has taken me. I had help from Dr. Wood, but it probably took me a couple of years to work all this out. So, you know, I've sort of taken it upon myself to try and summarize this, because I know people are always short of time, and you know, and sort of just distill it down to what people can grasp quickly and straightforwardly. So that's really been my, you know, goal in getting involved with this research. And going back to the affidavit and the court case and stuff, this brings out the idea of the thermite again, because if you go onto Dr. Wood's website, you'll see what's called her RFC, which I mentioned before, the request for correction. You'll see the document submitted for the legal case too. Now, the Steve Jones Group and the Architects for Engineers for 9/11 Truth Group, they also submitted a request for correction to NIST, and they submitted it 3 weeks after Dr. Wood did. But in their request for correction, they did not mention thermite, and they did not mention molten metal. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can go onto their website. You can download their request for correction document and their appeal. And in the original document, thermite is not mentioned. But Steve Jones claims that the evidence for thermite is conclusive, and he claims to have this chain of custody for this dust sample. And they've written a scientific paper on it, and they published a scientific paper on the Bentham Open Science Journal, or Open Chemical Journal, I can't remember which. So they're claiming that this thermite is proved. Well, if it's proved, then why didn't they put it in their legal submission? You know, if it's not good enough to put in a legal submission, then why wasn't it in there?
And absolutely.
They don't seem to have an answer for this. So that, again, you know, we've got connection to Los Alamos. We've got the energy connection, the cold fusion connection, the cold fusion cover-up. We've got this thermite, which appears to be basically another you know, Al-Qaeda story. It's Al-Qaeda, son of Al-Qaeda did it story. And then Jones changes his story. He initially said the thermite was carried in loads. Then it changed to be nanothermite, which could either be an incendiary, which is something that burns, or an explosive. And then, in March 2008, he said it could have been paint on thermite. And I've got an audio of him saying this, suggesting that it was paint on thermite. And how on earth are you going to ignite such a thing, you know, in a clandestine way? And I mean, it doesn't explain the evidence anyway. It doesn't explain the toasted cars. How can it invert cars? How can it bend steel girders into a horseshoe shape? How can it cause instant rusting, which was another phenomena we saw? How can it affect the banker's trust building and melt girders in that, which the film is FEMA said there was no fire in the banker's trust building, but we've got a picture of a melted girder in there from a FEMA report, which we think was the energy effect was essentially bled over into the banker's trust building. John Hutchison has sort of confirmed that you can get ongoing effects after the energy has been switched off. You know, you can see these samples of metal structurally changing at an atomic level if you've got the right equipment to test that. On and on and on this goes. So you know, I just think it's very important that people understand the energy connection to all of this, and that free energy is real. And not only is it real, it's been turned into a weapon. And I've, you know, again, in researching the free energy question, we've heard groups saying, well, just think if we did have free energy, when what if terrorists got hold of it? You know, because if terrorists get hold of this sort of technology, then they could destroy the world. Well, I'm sorry, but the terrorists have already got it. And not only have they already got it, they used it on 9/11. And mm-hmm. that is what the evidence tells us, you know. It's very shocking, it's very frightening, but it is true. As far as I can tell, that is the only conclusion which I can draw from having studied, you know, the evidence for the last sort of 6 years, basically. That's my final conclusion. And I think
actual fact is whoever did it once, they can do it again.
Absolutely,
hey. Do this or do that, or social engineering, or hold it as a threat, or God knows what.
Well, this is it, and I think, you know, we another story I can tell you involves something that Dr. Wood got and I got involved in July 2007, because at that time there was a new law was passed by Bush, and it was to do with the continuity of government. In other words, what the government would do if there was a catastrophic terrorist attack and they had to, you know, move out of the sort of Capitol building and all that area and the White House. And they were going to transfer the continuity of government's responsibility for that to another agency. And this was in July 2007. And at the same time, we had Michael Chertoff, who was then the head of Homeland Security, saying that you know, they'd been receiving reports that Al-Qaeda had got hold of nuclear weapons, you know, from the Ukraine or something that had been smuggled out. And also at the same time, we had Steve Jones and Bill Deagle doing a discussion in a 9/11 Truth Conference in Vancouver, talking about 22 American cities being pre-wired with nukes. That's what Bill Deagle claims to have knowledge of. He says in this interview from 2007, I'm sure he still says the same thing, that 22 American cities have been pre-wired with nuclear explosives. Now, this is a very strange thing for him to be saying, because if I went out on the street and said something like that, I think Homeland Security would be wanting to talk to me, you know, and they'd probably have me up for a couple of days and interrogate me in a cell, you know, but that doesn't seem to have happened to him, oddly enough. So what we thought was, where they were planning was, if you go and look at Dr. Wood's website and you look at the pictures, it looks like a nuclear bomb went off at the World Trade Center, and we've heard other people saying that this is actually what happened. So we thought, well, let's see what's going on here. We've got Michael Chertoff saying Al-Qaeda nukes. We've got Bill Deagle and Steve Jones saying that the possibility of a nuke attack. What if they're planning to do another attack using the weapon, and then they're going to blame it on Al-Qaeda nuke, which we'll know wasn't real, when we know they're using that as a cover story for another use of the weapon? And we got to know a friend called Ambrose Lane, who does a talk show called We Ourselves, and that's in the Washington DC area, but he was also at that time doing RBN. Sorry, not RBN. He was doing a Power XM channel program. And I'll tell you what happened to him after the break.
Okay, great. We'll be back in just a minute. UK, go ahead.
Sure, thanks. So what was happening is we'd looked at this idea of them, using the weapon again. This was in July 2007, and blaming it on an Al-Qaeda nuke. And what we decided to do is we'd approached Ambrose Lane just to sort of talk about this idea on air, you know, just to sort of, we weren't trying to scare people because we didn't have any evidence that this was, you know, actually what was going to happen. It was just a kind of postulation, really, that this was a possible way that they might try and disguise it. But basically, I was sat here waiting for the call because they were going to call me to go on this Power XM station. And Ambrose Lane at that time was one of the most popular hosts on that network, and he did 16 hours a week. And, you know, Dr. Wood was waiting in South Carolina, and the call never came. So I think a few hours later, or it might have been the next day, I rang the producer because I had his number, and I said, what happened with the call yesterday? And he said, oh, well, they cancelled the show. And I said, well, you know, did Ambrose go off sick or something? And he said, no, they cancelled the whole show, and they fired him. And Ambrose Lane was fired from the network on the day that we were due to go on. And he was actually driving into his parking space, I learnt next day. And he was fired from the network, and he never went back.
And, oh, my God.
And then we had a similar situation about 18 months later with Richard Syrett, who is one of the hosts from who used to go on CFRB. And he, not long after he'd had Dr. Wood on, and he was talking about some other stuff on other programs, you know, with energy technology and this sort of thing with another physicist. It was about, I think, 2-3 months after that, that he was fired from his network as well. So, you know, is somebody trying to sort of cover things up here and make sure the cat doesn't start running around too much now it's out of the bag? You know, I mean, that's the sense that we were getting, very, very real sense of that happening. And what we'd been witnessing on the internet, you know, if you posted something on a forum about this, any of the topics that I've sort of covered, within a few minutes, you'd get some anonymous poster coming on saying, oh, that Judy Wood, she's just a nutcase, you know, and all this sort of thing. And, but again, you know, things started to move on because what happened next really was, this Alfred Weber character. He entered the picture as well, because Alfred Weber, he's been involved in what's called the exopolitics movement. And he was at a conference which Dr. Wood gave a 2-hour presentation at in August 2007. And this conference was organized by Jim Fetzer. And at that conference, Alfred Weber praised Dr. Wood's research very highly and unequivocally for proving that a directed energy weapon was used at the World Trade Center. And, so we were quite gratified about that somebody was actually, you know, praising this research because it had been attacked so much prior to that. And that was all well and good. But then what happened was Dr. Wood and John Hutchison had started to, you know, sort of do this research together, or really I should say that John Hutchison was commenting on some of the material that Dr. Wood was compiling. And And then Dr. Wood visited John Hutchison in Vancouver, which was where this Alfred Weber chap lived. And he asked them to do an interview with him for his radio program, because he also runs a radio program. And they actually went to his house, and they did this interview, and it was about an hour and 10 minutes long. And they talked about, you know, in more detail what I've talked about the effects of the World Trade Center and John Hutchison's experiments, et cetera, et cetera. And he broadcast this interview, but it was recorded on the 14th of February, and it wasn't broadcast until April, after somebody had talked about thermite on the same slot, same radio slot, and Alfred Weber had broadcast an interview with Richard Gage, mm-hmm. which was rather unusual. But we thought, hey, well, you know, he's just scheduled it that way, and it's we think it's slightly odd, but you know, that's we think it's slightly odd. So what? But then the following November, Alfred Weber came on to Sophia, Sophia Shafquat. She did a radio program about 9/11 stuff, and Sophia Shafquat, so people might not know her, but if people have seen a film called 9/11 Mysteries. She made this film called 9/11 Mysteries, and she said that it cost her $35,000, I think it was. She spent of her own money making this film. And we sort of emailed her a couple of times. And the 9/11 Mysteries film, it's actually a pretty well-made documentary if you watch it, for one that's not been on television, or at least it's not been on regular TV. It's pretty well-made, you know, it's well-produced. It's got a good sort of editing, good soundtrack, good voiceover. And we wondered if she'd be interested in making a documentary about some of the things that I've been talking to you about, the directed energy weapons research and the Hutchinson effect stuff. So we emailed her a couple of times, but she didn't really express much of an interest.
Mm-hmm.
And Alfred Weber went onto her program with another physicist, a geoscientist, I should say, called Lorraine Murray. And she basically went through a whole long list of evidence, which was exactly what Dr. Wood has listed on her website. And at the end of it, she said, that's how I know that HAARP destroyed the World Trade Center. And we're thinking, well, this is very strange, because she's not talking about the Hutchinson effect. And Alfred Weber didn't mention the Hutchinson effect either at all. And he didn't mention the hurricane, even though we knew he knew about the Hutchinson effect and 9/11 connection, because he'd interviewed both Judy Wood and John Hutchinson at his house. And he didn't mention it in this interview at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we thought this was very, very strange. And then after that, Sophia Shafquat, she did something very unusual. Are we going I just thought I heard the music there again for a minute. What happened about a couple of months after that she actually produced her own theory about how the towers were destroyed, and she said that it was fluoride that was destroyed the World Trade Center.
Okay, hold that thought. I hear the music now. I got my hearing aid. I lost my last hearing aid. I had one, and Natalie went away in the second one, and we'll be back in a minute for the rest of the. It's just astounding facts. Back in a minute. Stay tuned. Or do we just need a? Joe, just give us a. Are you there, Joe?
I'm here.
You got a quick question for Andrew Johnson? He's still got a lot to cover here before our time runs out.
Yeah, comment. Thank you for everything you're doing from all the way across overseas there, and a comment for the American people that just won't wake up to this. But my question is, what could one of those directed energy weapons do if they actually were directed at people and not buildings? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, I think, you know, again, you can look at some of the evidence from the witness accounts particularly. I did refer to, you know, things like people being levitated, David Hanscher, which we have a video of. But a lot of the other information that we've drawn on has come from a set of 500 witness accounts, which were published in 2005 following a Freedom of Information request on the New York Times website. And again, you know, you can download all of those. And I did, in fact, download all 500 of them some time ago. And if you trawl through all those accounts, you'll read, for example, of people that are in World Trade Center Building 6, which had a big hole in the middle. There were, I think, two or three guys walking together through the building, and then all of a sudden one guy says that the other guy just disappeared. So, you know, I think basically it can make them disappear is an answer to that. It can make them, you know, turn to dust, or not obviously to dust, but to particles, in the same way that it made the building turn to particles. I don't think, you know, when the weapon is cranked up to the level that it was, which it obviously had to be cranked up to a high level, or whatever reaction it was that it started off was going on at a very rapid rate, certainly for the two towers. We think that World Trade Center 7 may have been done slightly differently, but it was still the use of the weapon. So basically it just makes people disappear, in the same way that the steel, disappeared or turned to dust.
Okay, I got another caller here. Let me address, I've got a couple callers in. I don't want to cut all this up. Tom in Alaska. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hi, Ralph. I just wanted to know if you've tried to get on George Norrie. He's got a huge audience, and get this word out.
Well, yes. The answer to that question is yes, we have. I have had a conversation involved with that, yes, and a friend of mine actually spoke personally to George Norrie in April 2008 at the conference in Washington, X conference. So yes is the answer to that, but no luck yet.
How about Alex Jones? He's got a pretty good audience too.
Alex Jones doesn't like this sort of evidence. He finds it very the antithesis of what he wants to be talking about, as it would seem. I've actually got an article about Alex Jones on my website if you want to go and check it out. And he tried to say that people who talk about lack of planes at the World Trade Center were liars and they just make stuff up, and they tried to attack him viciously and things like this. I've actually got an audio clip of him saying this as well. A lot of what I've told you today is actually come. You know, people say, have said to me, oh, you're attacking everyone, Andrew. And in fact, I'm not attacking anyone. What I'm doing is pointing out what they themselves have actually said. And as regards Alex Jones, for example, he says that no planers are liars and they cheat and they make stuff up. I can't, those aren't his exact words, but I've got a little article where I've transcribed, a paragraph where he says essentially that. And you can go and hear the audio clip with this on another radio program. So he doesn't seem to be open to what I'm telling you from my experience. He hasn't contacted me anyway. And, if he asked me to go on his program, then I would go on and explain what I've explained to the audience here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thanks, Tom. I've got a couple more callers. Michael in New York, you got a question too on point here?
Hello, Ralph. Thank you, Sir Ralph, for your show. It's always very informative, and I appreciate that. I have some comments, and I'm not trying to debunk your guest or anything. I'm just talking about my personal experiences from what I know on 9/11, plus also the Dave on Kleist 9/11 in plain sight video.
Yeah, I've seen the Dave. So you have can you give us a comment? Because we're running out of time here.
I'll try to sum it up quick. First of all, I had a cousin in the buildings that day, escaped with his life. And when I talked to him about apparently pods on the belly of a plane firing missiles in, he was so adamant and got very upset with me because he said, Mike, I've seen the planes. I've seen it coming right in, Mike. But then through further talking over and over, because he was getting very perturbed with me, very annoyed, but I kept going over and over and over until he said, it sounded like a missile. And I said, what'd you say? Because I was trying to tell him that there was missiles fired from some kind of pods off a plane. Now, secondly, Stewart Airport's not far from me. And through mutual friends, I heard a number of months back someone telling me that a good friend of theirs, ex-Air Force, works at Stewart Airport, and he was saying that he was working on drones that morning at Stewart, and they were 757s, and he was, confused about that because he never seen them there before, but that's what he does. His specialty was working on drones.
Let me interrupt here. That's good information here, but the evidence that they've got so far that they're putting out, I mean, there's no doubt about that's not what really happened there. So let me get the next caller because we're running out of time here. I don't want to be Kevin in Australia. You got a comment or a question on point?
Hello,
Kevin.
Oh yeah, right. I'm on. Hey, listen.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, I'm following this quite closely here. I'm an engineer myself. I'm going to stick to the Hutchison, Judy Wood, and Stephen Jones sort of theme. I haven't quite made up my mind absolutely, what actually went wrong or what happened as far as the 9/11 goes. But I was traveling around the USA in 2006, going on towards 2007. I was traveling with a lady, professor, PhD, worked at one of the universities, which I won't, structural engineer, which I'm not going to mention. I don't want to even bring anybody else into it. But we were having a debate about this whole thing. And I'd read a lot of stuff that Professor Judy Woods had compiled.
So you have a question here. I don't want to hurry up, but I got a couple of questions myself, and we only got about 10 minutes
left. Okay. Well, with the actual building, I agree it didn't fall down. It sort of blew up. It didn't vaporize. It was pulverized. After the dust had settled, there were columns and beams and things which were cut off at 45 degree angles, which clearly, points out thermite as far as those beams were concerned, and there were lots of them.
Okay, so is your question because some of the beams look like they'd been cut off with a welding torch or something? Is that your question to Andrew Johnson?
It wasn't a welding torch. It was like a controlled demolition style cut off.
Okay, why don't we let him answer that question here, and then we'll get back. I appreciate you listening in. Why don't you answer that question for some of those beams?
Sure. The angle cut core columns are commonly brought up now. If you actually look at what's on Dr. Wood's website, for the first thing is we're talking about probably the top 90 stories, which were turned to dust. Now, the photographs which show the angle cut columns, we don't actually know who took those photographs. There is a possibility that they're not quite showing what they seem to be showing, but nevertheless, we can't be sure whether thermite was used in the cleanup operation or not. It may have been used. There is no definite witness testimony that's been, given under oath that somebody used a thermite charge to help in the demolition of the remains that were near ground level. But if you go and look at the array of pictures on Dr. Wood's website, you cannot argue that most of the building was destroyed. Now, there may have been a few angle cut core columns in there, as a result of either some thermite charges being laid, but we don't have any other evidence that this is actually what happened. And even if it was used, which I very much doubt, it simply does not explain the other evidence, which is far, far more important to explain. Now, how did cars get upside down? And that sort of thing. And if I may just briefly go back to the plane issue, if you go and read the witness accounts, which I referred to before, and I've written an article about this, a very confusing picture comes out of the stories with the planes. And the other thing to mention is the magnetometer data, which shows a precise dip in the Earth's magnetic field at precisely 8:46, which was supposedly when the first plane hit. And that, to me, is a slam dunk of an energy effect being used not only to destroy the building, but to make the hole in the buildings too. And you can see that in six different instruments, which are actually up your way, Ralph, in Alaska.
So really restated, there could be a contamination or a cover of something put into this just to muddle this up or whatever you want to call it, so that you can't really get a clear, concise picture.
No, I mean, if you have a geoscientist coming on the radio and saying, I'm absolutely 100% certain that Harp did it, who are people going to look at? Are they going to look at this supposedly expert geoscientist, or are they going to look at Dr. Judy Wood and her, degrees in civil engineering and engineering subjects? I mean, how are people going to choose between those two? It becomes very, very difficult, which is why, this information is put out there in this form.
Well, you have to look at the evidence. And I got another question that I've not heard an answer to yet. Percate. They wanted to cover it up. Why it was there? What's your take on that?
Well, the hurricane is very, very interesting. Again, independently, I'd looked at the evidence for weather modification, and I've got another presentation about that, which I finished sometime in 2006. And I'd seen the evidence that, for example, a hurricane Ophelia had some modification effects. I've got a graphic of that from a satellite which showed some strange cloud patterns. But the hurricane, again, it went past Bermuda. It was reported on CNN. It was a tropical storm. It did a bit of damage on Bermuda. I think it was on the 7th. And CNN said, oh, it's going out to sea, somebody sent me a BBC story on it as well recently, which I'd not seen before. And they said it was going out to sea. And they said, it's nothing to worry about. In fact, it was going out to sea, but in the direction of New York. So if this hurricane, how did they know it was going to go out to sea? Why were they saying it wasn't a risk? And in fact, after the 7th, it actually went towards land. It went inland. That's not going out to sea. you know, it's going out to sea away from Bermuda, but it was going in the direction of New York. So why weren't the weathermen saying, oh, this could make landfall? I mean, you know, we heard about Katrina and a lot of the other hurricanes are reported maybe a couple of days before they're due to make landfall. And the way that Hurricane Erin was traveling, it was heading towards land, but it was not reported. It was on the, you know, they had an opportunity to report on the morning news on 9/11, and as the weather maps that Dr. Wood has uncovered don't show it. You know, they show rough seas. So, if with the hurricane, there are two possibilities. Either it was a coincidence or it wasn't a coincidence. If it was a coincidence, then why wasn't it reported in the news? Because it was going to be a risk. You know, New York, one of the sort of richest real estate areas in the whole world, you know, if that had been flooded out, Manhattan had been flooded out with storm swells, you know, huge damage, huge cost to the American economy. So, you know, you're going to want to protect that pretty, you know, emphatically. So you're going to be wanting to get that reported as a risk early on. And when this thing's heading towards New York, I mean, how come this wasn't reported, you know?
And is there any chance this hurricane could have had something to do with the energy that was required for whatever happened?
I think it was, because, again, if you go back to John Hutchinson's experiments, one of the things that he's used in a number of his experiments to produce what's called the interference effects of these different energy sources is a Tesla coil. Now, a Tesla coil is a type of special winding of a coil, and, you know, you can go to Google Images and just do Google Tesla coil so you can see what one looks like, or you can go onto Dr. Wood's website and look at the Erin series. And you can see that it does in fact look like a hurricane. If you look at an elevation view, a side view, looks like a Tesla coil. And indeed, we know that storm systems are associated with a large quantity of electrical charge. We get lightning associated with them. And people who have arthritis, for example, or other types of conditions can sense a storm approaching. So we know that the electrical field from the storm is felt remotely. And Dr. Wood has also put on her website weather data from three of the New York airports, LaGuardia, Newark, and JFK. And all three airports had dry thunder on 9/11. And dry thunder is where you get thunder, but no lightning and no rain. So we know that there was a field effect being felt in the vicinity of New York from the hurricane. And you know, our guess is that this was used as one of the field components to somehow facilitate the destruction of the towers. It's also possible, you know, I've suggested that maybe the hurricane was steered there to soak up some of the energy. It was like an energy sponge of some kind, so that the energy could be, you know, carefully controlled to destroy the buildings. I mean, if we look at the way the buildings were destroyed, it was a pretty good job. You know, they just made a bit of a mess up with the Bankers Trust, but all the World Trade Center buildings were taken out, all of them. So there was actually about six or seven buildings destroyed, on 9/11, not just 1, 2, and 7. World Trade Center 6 was pretty much completely destroyed. World Trade Center 4 was cut in half. You know, weird stuff going on to these buildings. So they obviously had a pretty good grasp of how this was going to unfold. Maybe they even simulated it, you know.
So would it be a good thing to say that the bottom line is we could contaminate this thing with a little thermite to do something or other or whatever. We could do a little of this and a little of that. But when you look at the real evidence, rubble is gone. Steel towers are being turned into dust. We got cars flipping upside down. We got cars burning that aren't even in close proximity to the building. And we got a hurricane that nobody wants to talk about.
Correct. Absolutely. Those, I think you've very accurately covered the very most important and key pieces of evidence, which if you go to an Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth conference or meeting or talk, you probably won't hear any of that actually discussed. You know, and if you ask a question, they'll just say, well, you know, we don't think that's important because we think thermite explains it. I mean, that's been my experience. You know, they just say that thermite covers everything and they don't really engage with it, which of course is exactly what the 9/11 Commission did. You know, they said, well, we know it was Al-Qaeda that did it and we know bin Laden's admitted it. So we don't need another story because it explains everything. It's the same.
How do they get the superior knowledge?
Yeah, that's it. You know, it's the same tactic. You know, they just ignore the evidence which they cannot explain. And this happens, you know, time and time again. You know, and this has been a theme which I've tried to address. Same with crop circles. You know, we briefly mentioned off air about the issue with the crop circles. And I did a talk on that. You know, people might think I'm making a jump, but I'm actually going to read you a bit of an account. I think we've probably just about got time. And this was actually, I came across this earlier this year, and what interested me was the levitation issue which came in, and it was by somebody called Pat Delgado, and he was in a crop circle in 1989.
Hold that second, just a thought. We'll be right back, and I want to hear this. I'm telling you, folks, amazing information, amazing what facts are. Anyway, we'll be back in a minute. He's going to talk about the crop circles before we go. Back in a minute. We're back at Andrew, UK, talking about crop circles. Want to get the most in? Go ahead.
Okay, sure. Yeah, so what I came across earlier this year was a report from Colin Andrews, who's a very well-known crop circle researcher. He lives in LA now, I think, but he's originally from the UK. And he was talking about this story from 1989, which involved another chap called Pat Delgado, who recently passed away, but he was, you know, he was about 90 years old. And they were in this crop circle at about midnight in June 1989, and this is Pat Delgado's account, and I'll read it out. It's not very long. And he says, standing at the southern position with Colin, I was controlled to reach out and sweep energy from the sound into Colin's body. He heard this sound. I do not know why. Colin then left me and returned to the group at the top of the circle. I turned towards the sound, and my arms were being pulled over the crop with an even greater force, and my body felt it was being pulled upward and forward out of the circle at some perilous angle. With all my strength I could muster, I managed to withdraw my arms, gradually sink down and turn around, so I was now facing north. Eventually I laid down on my stomach and began to inch my way up to the centre of the sloping circle floor, grabbing at bunches of flattened barley stems and pushing with my knees and feet. My progress was slow because whatever the short distance I made forward, a force kept pulling me back half that distance. I was becoming totally exhausted, and at that moment I wondered what I was fighting against. And then he goes on about trying to get out, and Colin helped him out. But then he says, for some minutes we sat there, they got out of the crop circle, we sat there answering questions about what had happened, when suddenly some force levitated me to a height just brushing the flattened crop and floated me to the east side of the circle. Now I was feeling really scared. What force could have moved me a distance of about 3 meters while still in the same sitting position? So in other words, he's talking about this account of being levitated. And I was switched onto this because if you look at what crop circles are, they're flattened areas of crops. And how do you flatten things? Well, you flatten things by putting a weight on them. In other words, by putting a force of gravity onto them. So if we look at what happened at the World Trade Center, there appear to have been effects on the local gravity field because we had people being levitated. We've got several accounts of that. We've got one guy diving under an ambulance. This is in the witness accounts that I mentioned. And then the tower comes down. He puts his hands over his head thinking he's going to die. And the dust cloud comes past, and he gets up and he looks up. And the ambulance that he's dived under has gone. So we've got that levitation effect. So we've got gravity effects. And here in crop circles, I think we've got some type of technology which is very similar, but maybe in a different mode of operation to what they used to destroy the World Trade Center. In other words, they can switch gravity on to make the crop circle pattern, and then we're getting a residual effects as well because witnesses go into these circles and report feeling ill, and we get cameras failing and this sort of thing, which to me is some type of residual energy effect from the energy which is used to create these formations. And it's basically a punch-in gravity field. You can have some technology where you draw a design, and then you can create a stronger force of gravity in that area, because there is no way that all of these crop circles are being created by people with planks of wood and string. Some of them are done like that for sure, but certainly not all of them. So that's why I think there is a link, a technological link, and I think that in some cases, these crop circles are being created by the same groups that did 9/11, not in all cases, but in some cases, to deliberately introduce false information into the crop circle movement, particularly, in my view, with regard to 2012. I think there is very much an effort to sort of say, oh, everything's going to come to a head in 2012, you know, and there's going to be this huge great calamity and everyone's going to, you know, die or whatever, you know, version of that you care to talk about. And I think that they're trying to do another large-scale psychological operation, of end times, and trying to force us into that shoe. And I just don't think it's like that at all. I think it's much more complicated than that.
Well, we need to expand our minds, look at the evidence, and they throw all this stuff in to muddle it up and all these cover stories, and the main truth never gets covered. And there is checktheevidence.com is your webpage.
That's right.
And Andrew, I really want to thank you. Maybe I can get you back on again. Absolutely astounding information and knowledge, and we need to get this out, folks. Look at the evidence. Look at Dr. Judy Wood. Look at Andrew Johnson. Let's spread this information around, and as always, say, watch out for the federales are everywhere.
With recent internet.